What I advise people to do, again, no matter what business, you could be in real estate, you could be in anything, is if you want to accomplish more, eliminate the dead space. And the easiest way to do that is make sure you're taking daily consistent action towards your goal. Otherwise, weeks and weeks and weeks will go by and you'll never accomplish anything, not from lack of ability, but just you're just not working on the important stuff. So even I would rather tell somebody, you know, to work 5 minutes a day on their real estate ambitions than to spend, you know, 4 hours diving in every few weeks, because you need that momentum of every day. Just eliminate the dead space, eliminate, and you'll accomplish so much so fast.
You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
I'm absolutely delighted to have none other than Brandon Turner on the show today. Brandon, welcome to Hooked on Startups.
Hey, thank you. I'm super pumped to be here today.
Well, let me tell everyone a bit about Brandon. So you're an active real estate investor. You are an author, a musician. You're an entrepreneur. You are the co-host of nothing other than the most popular real estate podcast on earth, which is the Bigger Pockets podcast, with more than 40 million downloads. You know, that's quite a lot. I mean, followed quickly by the Hooked on Startups podcast.
Right. Right below it.
Behind you. So just, you better watch out there.
I'm watching. Don't worry.
So you've written several real estate books, including the book on rental property investing, and the number one real estate investing book. And you live and you invest in Western Washington State with your wife, Heather, and your new baby girl, Rosie. So clearly you've done nothing with your life.
Clearly.
So what got you into real estate investing? Because my theory about real estate investing is you have to be an entrepreneur. So this is my big central question. You have passive real estate investors who invest in things like funds and you know, here's my money, give me a return. But then there are people who want to be active real estate investors. And I think, and I've listened to a lot of the stuff that you've posted, a lot of your videos and your blog articles. But I think that the real skill is actually not just about finding real estate deals; it's having that whole entrepreneurial mindset. And is that what you found from, you know, all the people that you've spoken to and all of your, you know, tens of thousands of subscribers?
Yeah, I think so. I think you know, when I got into real estate, it was, you know, like there's two types of investors: people who build it from the ground up, and people, you know, are active involved in it, and then people who just have money and they're like, here, just use it, right? The problem is I had no money. I mean, nothing. I was making $9 an hour and basically minimum wage, working a horrible job. And so I had to be, and anybody who gets into real estate at that point has to be entrepreneurial to get there. You know, anybody can, if they've got hundreds of thousands of dollars sitting around, anybody can go and throw that into a deal and hope it works out. It's not very hard to just throw money at something. I'm not saying you'll make money, but it's not hard to throw it at something. But if you want to go from ground up, you've got to be entrepreneurial. I think you just have to be.
So let's go back. How many years ago was it that you started? I mean, were you, was you like 21 or something?
I was 21 years old. So I'm 32 now. So it was 11 years ago now when I bought my first house.
But you don't know much when you're 21. So
I mean, I knew everything. I thought I knew everything.
It's funny how I say to my kids, I have a son who's in his young 20s, and I say, look, you've got to write a book because you know everything. So write a book now before you forget it.
That's so true. Yeah, I did not know much of anything. I mean, all I knew at the time was, so I was raised by what we call a garage sale mom. That's what I call it. Like, my mom we went to garage sales every Saturday morning. Everyone's got their sale out in their yard. And my mom was really good at negotiating low prices, and that's just what she did. So I was raised to always get the best deal possible. So the only thing I really knew was, well, if I buy something that's really, really cheap, maybe I can sell it again later for a little bit more. And that's my very first deal. The only thing I knew was buy something cheap.
But what pushed you into real estate? Because a lot of entrepreneurs, they have that fire in their belly, as it were. And it's mainly to do with the fact that I hate being employed, yeah, as opposed to that I know what I'm going to do with my life. But did you find that it was something that real estate was clear to you, or was the fact that you wanted to be an entrepreneur, was that the message that was more than anything?
Good question. I think at the beginning, it was, I mean, it started accidentally. So that first house, I just needed a place to live, and it was cheaper for me to buy than it was to rent at the time. Now, that's not always true. In a lot of areas, that's never true. But in my area, it was, at the time, I could buy a house and live cheaper. And then I could also rent out the bedrooms to some friends and live for free. And so that's what I did. And I thought, well, that was pretty easy. I mean, I'm living for free in this house. What, you know, what if, you know, what if I did this more? And so I started thinking, well, what if I bought houses and then sold them? You know, we call it flipping houses. What if I did that? And I thought, well, I mean, that's a lot better than my $9 an hour job. And so I started buying houses to fix up and sell. So it really was a way of getting out of my job into a self-employment business, essentially, right? Because flipping houses isn't really investing. I mean, we call it that, but at the end of the day, I mean, you're just running a business. You buy something low price, you fix it up, and you sell it for a higher price, just like a guy who buys clothing from China and then sells in America. Same thing.
But how did you find your first house? And so did you go, right, as I'm 21 and I know everything, yep, I'm going to go and buy a house? Or did you take a moment and say, I probably need to find someone who knows something about this?
Yeah, I was bowling actually with a friend, and this friend's sister was there, and this friend's sister happened to be a real estate agent. And so she was just like, hey, you should buy a house, and it's cheaper. And so I said, well, tell me more about that. And so I just sat down with her, and she talked to me about, you know, this is how you get a loan from a bank. And this is back before the market also was crazy. So at the time, when you're 21 years old, you've got no credit, you're working minimum wage, basically you've got nothing going for you. And you call up a bank and they're like, sure, take millions of dollars. Like, they were like happy to throw away money to people like me. So the loan was easy. And the real estate agent really just kind of walked me through that first deal. And I got lucky in a lot of ways in that, you know, I got a good house. I could have bought a terrible house. I actually bought a pretty decent house that today I would be proud to buy as well. It didn't need that much work to fix up. It was mostly what we call cosmetic, you know, just paint and carpet and those kind of things. It was pretty easy at that point. And it just kind of flowed that way. I just needed my first house to live in, and I got lucky. It turned out to be a good investment. I think I made $25,000 on that when I sold it a year later.
So did you think at that point, this is it, I'm going to do two more houses and then I'm going to retire?
Sort of. Here's how I thought of it. And I still kind of think of it this way today. So the first thought was, I'm going to flip houses to get out of my job. But I thought, well, how do I get long-term out of working, period, right? That kind of drove me, because I don't really like working that much. So I'm like, how do I not work that much? Or at least how do I not work for someone else that much? And have the ability to do things like travel. I really want to go to Europe to backpack for a while. And I thought, how do I do that? And so the idea came to me, I think I read it in a book, that let's say every house you bought, you made $100 a month left over in your pocket after everything was said and done. After paying all the bills and after setting aside money for future repairs and all that, like everything is all said and done and the mortgages and all that. If I could just have $100 left over, that's mine to spend. Well, it made it very easy to figure out how I need to get out, you know, forever out of a job. I'm like, well, I only need about $3,000 at the time. I only needed $3,000 a month to pay all my bills. So I'm like, okay, well, if I was getting $100 per house, I only need 30 houses. So I'm just going to go buy 30 houses. And now it doesn't have to be, you know, I bought a duplex and I bought a fourplex and then I bought a 24 unit later on. And so I got those 30 units and then I said, okay, I'm done. And I went and sat on my couch and said I was retired at 27. I was 27 when I officially retired, so to speak.
And how difficult did you find it to raise the capital? So talk me through the mechanics of that, because again, I think it's probably, there's a bit more involvement than that.
Yeah, I mean, every single deal I think I did was a little different than everything else. And really, it all came down to this concept of not saying, you know, can I afford it or can I not afford it? It was, how do I buy this? Like, how do I do it? And just, I kept asking that question, how do I do it? How do I do it? And a lot of times, the answer wouldn't come to me until 3 a.m. when I'm up all night just sweating, thinking, how am I going to pull off this deal? It was tough. I mean, it's a whole lot easier when you have a lot of money than when you're a stupid 21-year-old.
But I guess it becomes, as you create momentum, you create credibility, you understand more about what you're doing. Yep. So let's talk about people that come into real estate with funds, whether it's in a 401k or cash or otherwise, and they don't have some of the skills that you've just talked about, because by the virtue of the fact that you're talking about, if I can raise $100 per house, then, you know, you're talking about goal setting there, you know, without being overt about it. And so what you've been able to do is say, my objective is I want to reach this particular goal within this period of time. And then you've worked backwards to break it down.
Yes.
In your experience, do you find that a lot of people come in with this, with a different mentality without understanding that? And how much of a challenge is it for you to try and educate them about all these other things that you need to know to be a successful real estate investor?
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, there's different types of people who come into real estate, right? Some people come in and they're just like, I'm just going to do this. And they start throwing money at everything and buying horrible deals that they never should have purchased. And they lack the education component. Other people will spend 5 years educating themselves and never drop a dime on a piece of property, no matter how good the property the deal is. They're just afraid. And I see both those types of people. And I think both are very dangerous. I mean, both, you can end up bankrupt or at least stuck in a job for the next 80 years of your life. So you gotta, there's a balance in between there. You have to get education, but you also have to take action.
But also, do you find that people get slightly frustrated when you say, look, you know, I've been doing this for 12, 13 years. I've been successful at it. I speak to a lot of people. This is what you need to do. You need to take a step back. You need to put a plan together. Is there a certain amount of frustration where people say, well, hang on, just tell me what I need to do.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I get that a lot, actually. Just the other day, some guy hit me up on Facebook Messenger and was like, tell me what I need to do to buy my first property. And I'm like, okay, well, listen to this podcast episode and this one, and then read this short little ebook. I don't have time for any of that. Just tell me what I need to do. Delete. I walk away from that conversation. I can't go there, right? Like, people want an easy answer. They want a simple, six easy steps to buy your first property. But I mean, yeah, real estate's fairly simple. You buy a property. You make money from it. You know, it's not that complicated of a topic, but people tend to, I don't know, they just want it so simple and so easy. I guess they want it easy. They want it easy, and it's not easy. It never has been easy. It never will be easy.
I think that's the big point. I mean, there is this instant gratification concept that people think real estate, I understand it because I bought my own house.
Yep.
But I mean, let's go through some of the things that did go wrong, because in all the deals that you've done, I mean, let's just examine where some instances where you were tripped up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that it happens all the time. One thing I discovered is the importance of being able to analyze a deal. You know, one thing I love about real estate is that you can kind of predict your future in a way. I mean, granted, none of us can predict perfectly what a deal is going to do, but especially with rental properties, you can estimate your cash flow pretty darn well. You know, you can say, okay, I'm going to, you know, rent it for this much, and I know that because of ABC, and I'm going to, you know, buy it for this much because this is what it costs, and I can put this much into repairs because this is what a contractor actually charges. So like, most numbers for the future are pretty easy to know. And then you can use some conservative estimates on where do you think the market's going to go. So anyway, the better you are analyzing, I think the easier deals become, the more confident you feel going into it, all that. And so I struggled with analysis at the beginning. I didn't really know what I was doing. I bought stuff because it was cheap. In fact, one of my houses I'm dealing with right now, I'm kind of paying the price for my earlier mistake. I call it my hell house. I bought this house for $42,000, a crazy cheap price. I thought it was a great deal because it was cheap.
Yeah.
But every time that house goes empty, and it goes empty a lot because I get terrible tenants that trash it every time, I have to put thousands and thousands of dollars into it just to get it back up to where it's passable. It's because, like, I didn't analyze the deal correctly. I didn't buy in a good enough neighborhood. I just didn't know what I didn't know.
Yes.
That said, do I regret that choice of buying that property? No, because I learned a lot of lessons from that. No matter how much money I lose on that one deal, I'll make way more off those lessons.
And so what advice would you give to people that have this desire to get into real estate, but you know, there are so many different courses out there, because I have a real bee in my bonnet about courses where people end up spending $50,000, you know, on this sort of education where they're kind of sucked in on the basis that this is what you need to know, but if you need to know a little bit more, but that comes at the next level.
Next level, the upsells. I hate that stuff too. I mean, Bigger Pockets in general was founded on the idea that you don't need that. I mean, I never took a single course, and maybe the right course could have saved me a little bit of trouble and whatever, but I don't regret not taking one because I probably would have been sucked into the, hey, just pay $40,000 for the next level and then $80,000 for the next level and mortgage your everything to pay for it. Yeah, I think that stuff is rough. I think you can read a good book or two or three. You know, like go to Amazon, find the best books on a certain topic. This is true for any industry, really.
Sure.
Right? And so go find the best two or three books on it and then just study those books. And if you really want more help, you know, what I recommend to people all the time is go find somebody who's already been successful doing what it is you want to do and find a way to provide value to them or partner with them or whatever. You know, if somebody came to me and they were in my area and said, hey, Brandon, I really want to flip a house. I don't want to make a mistake. Here's what I propose. I will do 100% of all the work. I will raise the money. I will do everything. And I'll split everything with you 50-50. I just need you to make sure I don't screw up.
Yeah.
I'd be like, all right, we're going to meet, you know, once every couple of weeks and go over your, of course I'll do that for, you know, 10, 20 grand, you know, sure. And I think that applies to any industry.
And I think you're right, because a lot of people, and this is, now we're talking about people that have relatively little to invest. So let's take a guy who has maybe $20,000. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to lose that $20,000 just through costs on your first deal.
Yep.
But this idea that you have of collaboration, of finding someone who's in a been successful in real estate, and we can talk about how you can find those people. But your idea is to say, look, I don't know much about real estate, but I can help you with this, this, and this. Can we trade that?
Yep. Yeah. Everybody's got an unfair advantage in some way. Everybody got something that they're good at that they can, give value to. In fact, a guy hit me up the other day and said, hey, you know, I have some questions about a real estate deal, but I don't want to come at you empty-handed. I'm a graphic designer. Do you need anything designed right now? I would love to design something for you. I said, actually, yeah, I need a logo for this one thing I'm working on. Great. So he shot me back this logo. It was great. And I spent the next several hours working through this deal with him because he provided good value. And everybody has something like that. Even if it's just, hey, can I run to Home Depot for you? Can I house sit your dog for you? I mean, whatever. There's ways you can provide value to somebody. Or just, if you're looking, we're talking specifically real estate, hey, I'll go find a deal for you. I mean, every real estate investor needs a deal. We all know how to get the deals. I mean, finding deals, there's a handful of ways to find them, but they're not that complicated. But what they require is a lot of work. And most big investors don't want to go and spend hours and hours searching for those deals. So if somebody came to me and said, hey, I want to find you a deal in your market, because I only buy in my market generally. I would be like, okay, do this, 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 and this, and go find me that deal. And I'd probably even cut them in on it because they did all the work.
And I think that's a very, very good approach, because I've seen a lot of people going to meetup groups. Mm-hmm. and where every week or every 2 weeks, they'll go to this group and they'll be machine gunned with a whole bunch of different information. It's very difficult to process that and to make it relevant to you. Yeah. The idea of almost interning, as it were,
yep.
Being a retired internee, where you say, look, I don't understand your business. I want to understand, tell me what to do. I think that's a fantastic idea. It's a great way of actually providing value and understanding what happens behind the scenes.
Yeah. I feel like there's a lost art of being an apprentice. I feel like that needs to be a book, back in the day, blacksmith, you want to be one, apprentice underneath somebody for years. And I know some industries still have it. If you want to get into the sheet metal union, you become an apprentice and a journeyman later on, but very few industries have that anymore. But the idea of being an apprentice is a very, very powerful thing. I mean, why not go be an apprentice under a super successful investor for a couple of years? That's going to be way better spent than doing what? Paying $50,000 for a guru to tell you stuff you could read in a book. I mean, it's crazy. So yeah, I'm a huge proponent of that. If you can try to intern or apprentice or whatever under somebody who's successful.
And obviously that's very good advice. And that's not advice that you generally get, because most of the advice that you get is go somewhere, sit there and have information pushed at you. Mm-hmm. And what happens in most of those cases, you come out really with your head spinning, yep, thinking this, I think I should probably understand that. So I think that's a fantastic idea to buddy up with someone, as it were, and try and trade some sort of value that you have. And I guess that we're all learning, because I read recently that you're looking at mobile home parks as an asset class. So did you find yourself having to go back to the apprentice stage for that almost?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what I'm doing. It's kind of interesting because right now I chose mobile home parks there's a few reasons I think they're a strong investment class, but more of it was just I needed to do something different, and I picked something and I'm going to go 100% into it. And that's just a tip I give to everybody. Like you said earlier, there's a lot of directions in real estate a person could go, and they're hearing some of the gurus from the stage or from a meetup talking about 20 different tactics. It doesn't really matter. You can find successful millionaires in every single niche in the world. I mean, you can find somebody who made millions of dollars selling, I don't know, like tops that you spin on a table, right? I mean, like, it doesn't really matter what you go into necessarily. But so many people just spend years thinking about going into something and they don't decide. So anyway, I just picked, I'm going to do mobile home parks. But then getting into that, I'm brand new. I'm at the same level that I was 10 years ago because I have no idea what I'm doing. I mean, I understand real estate, but it's a whole different game. Commercial real estate is a little bit different, and you know, learning how to reanalyze. So yeah, the first thing I did is I went and contacted the two biggest mobile home park investors that I knew. I had people make introductions for me. I used an asset that I had. So I'm a contributor for Forbes online occasionally. And so one of the guys is a very successful investor. So how do I provide value to this guy who's buying dozens of mobile home parks? Hey, maybe I can write a piece on him for Forbes. Yeah. So I interviewed him and wrote a piece on him for Forbes. Well, now that guy, I can call him anytime or email him. He's going to give me exactly what, you know, the skinny on a deal, right? Because now I've built that relationship by providing value that I could provide. So yeah, I'm following the same steps as I tell other people to do. I'm just doing it in a different niche now.
Which kind of comes back to what we were talking about originally, which is where if you want to be an active real estate investor, you know, it's like any business. You know, you have to understand the business. You have to build relationships. You have to take baby steps. Just because you've got $500,000 burning a hole in your bank account actually puts you at a disadvantage probably.
I totally agree. I say that all the time, that when you have money, I think it puts you at a far worse or, you know, a greater disadvantage in real estate investing. Because when you have money, you can make anything look like a good deal. You know, you can get numbers to lie all you want. I mean, like, you find a house that, let's, for example, let's say I want to buy a house for it's for sale for $100,000. You know, if I just go and put down, I have $100,000 cash. Yeah, I got no mortgage payment. I'm making lots of money on that property. But in reality, like, what actually, you know, what's my return look like? It's probably pretty terrible. But if I have no money and I'm forced to be creative, I'm forced to make sure I'm buying only the best deals. I'm forced to increase my education. Because if you don't have enough education, you're going to struggle. So, you force yourself to learn more, to study more, to be more aggressive, to be more ambitious, because you don't have to. So yeah, I find people without money are generally much better investors than those with. And the same thing true, even if you have money, like, you know, I wrote this book on investing with no and low money down because I'm really passionate about this topic of creative investing, not because it's good for people who are broke, but it's good for everybody. What I mean by that is this: when Donald Trump goes and buys a piece of property, he's likely, I mean, I don't know his finances, but he's likely not putting any of his own money into those deals. He's a billionaire. He's probably not putting his own money in. When Robert Kiyosaki goes out and buys a deal, or Ken McElroy, or any of these guys that are big investors that I look up to, go and buy their real estate deals, they're not putting their own money into the deal either. Because creative finance is not about how much money you have. It's about, like, whose money you're using.
But it's also what you're doing is you're trading, though, because there is a trade-off. I mean, you can't use other people's money unless you're going to give value to them. And the trade-off is, look, I have all this real estate knowledge, experience, and understanding. Yep. You have capital that's sitting there earning nothing. So I'll trade my knowledge and experience and the trust that we've built up so that – and I think that's what it's about as well. It's you know, there are a lot of people that have been incredibly successful in their day jobs that have now decided to move into real estate. So it's building that same trust with other investors.
Yep, I totally agree. And I think it brings up I shared this once, I think it was, I don't know, Instagram or something like that, where, like, I shared this little drawing I drew, and it was three things. You have to have, like, hustle, knowledge, or money, I think is what I said. And knowledge could be education. Pick two. If you want to succeed at real estate, you got to have at least two of those. So you can have hustle and knowledge, and you don't need money at all, like, because you're able to make money out of thin air. You can have hustle and money and not really know what you're doing, but you'll probably be fine because you've got a bunch of money. Or you can have, what was it, the third option, whatever, knowledge and money,
yes,
but no hustle, and you're probably still going to be fine. Like, just passively, you'll make money.
Well, because you probably are less likely to lose all your money if you have some element of knowledge. And this is critical, because when people talk about investing with $10,000, it is absolutely possible to do that, because if you can build up some value that you can trade, and yep. Coming back to your example earlier, if I have time, or if I can make time to go and find a deal, to speak to every real estate agent in the sector, to get some really good local knowledge that is of value to an investor, mm-hmm. that will help me come in on a deal that otherwise I wouldn't be able to touch with my $10,000.
Yep. Yep, it's totally true. And the way I like people to think about creative investing is like, two different quick analogies. The first one is this. If I were to come to you and tell you, I want to sell you my house is worth, let's say, $300,000. And I were going to sell you my house for 10 grand. That's it. I mean, what an incredible, you could sell it tomorrow and make $250,000, right? But what if you didn't have that 10 grand? What if you only had $100 in your checking account? But knowing you could make $250,000 tomorrow, I like to ask people that question. What would you do? And when you really start to think about it, people come up with some really clever ideas. You know, I'd go get a line of credit from the bank. I would work with my mom. I would do all those answers are the exact same answers that we use in larger real estate deals too. It's just, if you have a good enough deal, you'll be able to fund it is kind of the crux of that. And the second thing I like the kind of analogy to use is creative investing is kind of like a toolbox, where if you only have one tool in a toolbox, you have a hammer, there's very few projects you can take on. You can hit a hole in the wall, you can hit a robber if they come in your house, but that's about it. But if you got a hammer and a saw and a drill and a screwdriver, now you can, you know, fix a plumbing leak and, you know, build a shed. And if you got a jackhammer and everything else, you can build a house. And the more tools in your toolbox, the more projects you can take on. Same is true for creative finance or any kind of financing real estate. Is the more you have in your mental toolbox, the more knowledge you've gained on different ways to invest, the more projects you'll take on, and the easier you'll find financing, the easier you'll find everything, the more tools you have in your toolbox.
So is it that the secret of successful real estate investing is that there are no secrets?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, what's funny is that very little of what I've ever, I mean, I don't think I've ever taught anything new ever. I'm a marketing guy. Like, I like marketing. I mean, this is kind of what I do at Bigger Pockets. And I've always loved marketing. And so I put names to things to make it sound like it's something new. It's not new. None of this is new. I mean, like, for example, I coined the word house, or the phrase house hacking, back in the day, which means when you live in one unit and rent the other units out, you buy like a duplex and you live in half of it and whatever. Like, this has been done for thousands of years. I mean, like, this is a very common thing, but I called it house hacking. Now all of a sudden everyone's like, wow, have you heard about this new thing called house hacking? No, it's not new. And I could charge you $997,000 or whatever for my course on house hacking, and you're going to think you're getting something special. You're not. You're just getting repackaged information, which is all the real estate industry. So, like, yeah, I mean, nothing's new. It's all been done for thousands of years.
But the flip side to that, if you excuse the pun, is that with proper research and application, anyone really can be a successful real estate investor. Yeah. if they've had some success in other fields.
Yeah, definitely. Well, what I find is funny is that real estate is, people don't look at it as like a business. I didn't look at it for a number of years. This might have been one of the early, like, biggest mistakes I made, was I looked at it like it was this thing, like a hobby, or like, you know, just like something that I was working on. And I never realized, wait, real estate is a business, just like the guy who buys clothes from China, or the person who's opened a plumbing company. Like, when you treat it like a business. So for years, I didn't read business books. I only read real estate books. And my business didn't start improving dramatically until I started reading business books, things like The E-Myth or Getting Things Done by David Allen, or, I mean, even like Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And like, when I started reading those business books, The Lean Startup is a fantastic book.
Yes.
Once you learn those things, they apply to real estate. And then real estate becomes a business that you can improve, and it makes a lot more sense.
And I think that's, again, that really resonates, because this concept, people do think of real estate as something that's not a business, because they feel that they are very, they know real estate because they live in a house. Maybe they bought a house, as I was saying earlier. Yep. And one of the quotes that you talk about in one of your other articles is Hal Elrod.
Yep.
And where, if you can understand that real estate is a business and not a hobby, and it's not a given and it's not a shoe-in, and it comes with all the same risks and rewards, yep, as a business. And how, you know, what do you remember that quote from Hal Elrod, the idea of the process? If you create the process.
Yeah. If you define your process and commit to it for an extended period of time, the results take care of themselves. Elrod said that. So think of sit-ups, right? You could have a goal of getting, or I mean, sorry, not sit-ups, but six-pack abs. You could have a goal of getting these really sexy abs, right? You could put a picture on your wall. You could do, you know, tell all your family and friends. You could say morning affirmations about having a six pack. But that's not what gets a person a six pack. There's one thing that gets you a six pack. Well, two things, diet and exercise, right? We all know that. That's the process. So people focus so much on the goal and on like, you know, what they want to achieve, when really all you need to do is focus on the like, what does the process look like for six pack abs? What does it look like for real estate investors? And so what I like to suggest is, you know, like in a business, like any business, there's processes you go through. So for real estate, if you can analyze a bunch of deals, if you can get leads, like somehow there's a lot of ways to do it. If you can analyze those leads to find out what number makes it a home run deal, because remember, home run deals are easy to finance. Once you get a good deal, they're easy to finance. So what number makes it a good home run deal? And then make that offer. And yeah, 90% of the time your offer is going to be rejected. You're going to get a big fat F on your paper, right? And so in high school, we learned that that's a terrible thing and you're an idiot if you get an F. But like, I fail all the time in real estate. I make offers all the time and I get rejected. That's okay, because I know that, you know, if I can fail 90% of the time, it means one out of 10, I'm going to get accepted. And that means I make 10 offers, I get a house, you know, one step closer to wealth, financial freedom, all that. So it just, it's thinking of it not like a hobby, it's like a business. And that's how the most successful business owners I know treat their business.
Exactly. So therefore, when you see these adverts for, you know, become a real estate gazillionaire in three simple steps, just download my course.
Yep.
You know, that's not something necessarily that people should be focusing on.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, I think there's reasons to, I don't want to tell anybody to go to one of those guru seminar things, because they're just going to upsell you and they're very, very good at manipulating emotions.
Well, but let's talk about your book. I mean, this is not a, sure. You know, this is because clearly, you know, when you publish a book, you put a lot of thought into it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the information that comes into your books is clearly from your own experience.
Sure.
So would you say that, I mean, the general book, your number one real estate investing book, I mean, what are the key messages that come out of that should, sure, that can help people?
Sure. Yeah. The book that seems to do really, really well is the one I wrote called The Book on Rental Property Investing. It's been always number one or number two since it came out in Amazon for real estate books. I mean, really, like the whole book was designed to be a, hey, step one, you need to do this. Step two, you need to do this. But by the end of the book, you should have a property. I mean, my goal was just like, how could I write a book that somebody would never have to read another book or attend any seminar, guru course, whatever? Like, how could somebody get every piece of information needed to buy that first property? So yeah, there's a chapter on pretty much every single topic you can imagine. Now, that said, I will also say that, you know, one of my favorite quotes is from a guy named Derek Sivers. He ran CD Baby back in the day. And he said, if more information was the answer, we'd all be rock stars with six-pack abs.
Or that's right. I remember that. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I love that quote, because it's like, the information's there. You need that. And I believe that's very fundamental. But you also need there's something else that drives entrepreneurs forward. And if you don't have that, you're going to struggle. You know, you could have all the information in the world how to get a six pack, but you're not going to do it if you don't have that guts or whatever you want to call it to go out and actually exercise. So how do you get that? I don't know.
Well, again, you talk about dead space, you know, yep. And it's about application. So I think it's very important just, you know, to if you are on the path of investing and you're wanting to learn how to learn to be an investor. And this, I love the concept of dead space. I mean, what is that?
Sure. Sure. So this whole idea of that, like, if you want to accomplish anything out there, eliminate the space in between the steps. In other words, let's say you want to get in shape. We'll go back to that analogy. You could go to the gym on a Monday and then 3 weeks later, go to a racquetball court and play some racquetball. And then 3 weeks later, maybe, you know, go and jog a little bit. That's likely not, I mean, there's so much space that's dead in between there that change never really happens. The same is true for, I mean, every single thing you can pretty much imagine. Imagine reading a book, right? You could read one page and then put it down for a month and pick it up again. So the question is, how long does it really take to read a book? I mean, in reality, if you ask people that, how long does it take you to read a book? They'll be like, I don't know, usually about a week. Like, wow, you're a really slow reader. That's 168 hours. And they say, well, no, I read it like, you know, 10 minutes before bed every night. Okay, so if you want to read a book, it really takes 4 hours about to read a book. So if you just eliminated all the dead space in any project, you'd finish it in 4 hours. So what I advise people to do, again, no matter what business, you could be in real estate, you could be in anything, is if you want to accomplish more, eliminate the dead space. And the easiest way to do that is make sure you're taking daily consistent action towards your goal. Otherwise, weeks and weeks and weeks will go by and you'll never accomplish anything, not from lack of ability, but just you're just not working on the important stuff. So even I would rather tell somebody, you know, to work 5 minutes a day on their real estate ambitions than to spend, you know, 4 hours diving in every few weeks, because you need that momentum of every day. Just eliminate the dead space, eliminate it, eliminate it, eliminate it, and you will, you'll accomplish so much so fast.
And this really comes down to what a lot of success is based on, these types of habits.
Yeah.
You know, and it comes back to the point, you know, to be a successful real estate investor, you have to be successful at being a real estate investor.
Yep. I totally agree. Yeah. The same habits apply to everything. And that's, again, because real estate is a business. So, I mean, you know, that's why it's important for real estate investors to read business books, is because it is a business and it all applies. So, I mean, again, dead space, did I make that up? I coined the term, did I, like, from a marketing standpoint, but it's just the concept of just taking action consistently and daily. I mean, I set a goal, like, hey, for the next 90 days, I'm going to set aside 10 minutes every day for the next 90 days to work on this one project. Like, do you think you'll be further along than you were when you started? Of course you would be. Like, if you just work on the right things consistently.
But this is not stuff that you're regurgitating from, you know.
I hope not. I don't think I've ever read.
Well, no. What I mean, though, is that this is stuff that you know and you speak passionately about because it comes from the school of hard knocks.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. Like in the mobile home park thing, I decided I was going to do that past in January. We are now recording this in August. Does it really take me 8 months to start making offers on a mobile home park? Of course not. It should have taken me a week. I filled the last 8 months with a lot of dead space. A buddy of mine, David Green, recently said a quote. He said, he's actually my partner on the mobile home business. He said, we will move at the speed at which we meet. And what he meant by that was, if we met every single day, we would make this business happen so fast. But the fact that we only talk every couple of weeks, maybe every month, for a few minutes, for an hour, whatever, we move at the speed at which we meet. And so, again, like, to revisit the dead space thing, like I say it in my own life all the time. I see the reason that it took me so long to kind of build up a sizable portfolio. It took me 7 years to be able to quit my job. Today, if I had a reason to get out of a job now, I could do it in a year or less, because I've learned to eliminate all that dead space.
So what advice would you give to your 21-year-old self?
Yeah. I would say, like, identify exactly what I want and then work towards that as hard as possible. I mean, like, I didn't really know what I wanted. I just kind of, like, I'll buy a property here and a property there. And, you know, eventually I got the idea that I wanted 30 units, and that's why I just went out and bought 30 units and quit my job. But just that idea of knowing exactly what you want and then just hardcore working towards that every single day, I probably would have got there when I was 23 or 24.
Yes.
Also, I didn't, like I said earlier, I didn't analyze deals very well. I would have spent a lot more time learning how to analyze them up front. And I would have read more business books.
I think you're right. Because you mentioned David Allen's book, Getting Things Done, and how that's been quite useful for you.
Yeah, it very much so. And I don't follow all of this stuff, but, you know, I try just to, when I read that, it really made me think about, how am I spending my time? A couple things that I pull out of there. He calls something the next actionable step. And this goes back to the dead space thing. Like, if you can just define what the next step is in any course. In fact, just before recording this call right now, I was in the kitchen with my wife and we were talking about, like, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed with a lot of rehab projects going on right now. I'm rehabbing, like, I think I have like 7 different kind of projects that are in the middle of being done right now. And some are getting sold, some are, we just bought. And I'm like, I'm just kind of feeling overwhelmed. And she said, well, let's sit down and define the next step for each one of these. I said, okay, let's do that. Yeah, so we just, okay, well, and what was funny is that with most of the projects, the fact that I was feeling kind of anxiety over it is because I just had not identified what the next step was. And in like 5 out of 7 of the cases, the next step was simply to send a text message. That was it. Like, how much easier? I mean, you got it written right here. Like, yeah, like, all I had to do was text Tracy, text Robert, text Andy, text Lance. And like, as soon as that text was done, it's off my shoulders. It's off my whatever plate and somebody else. But for the past probably 2 weeks, these have been sitting here in my head and I haven't identified the next step. So anyway, when David Allen talked about identify your next actionable step. And so I continually try to do that because usually it's something that'll take less than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it'll move your business forward.
I mean, I found that book hugely interesting. One of the quotes that I remember is, your brain is designed for creation and thinking and not storage.
Yeah.
You know, the moment I read that, I thought, you know, I have been stupid for all my life. Because if you can just write stuff down somewhere and know where it is, then you haven't got, you don't think about it. So you can actually, so that's a great book, sort of, you know. So there's two books people should buy, yours and David Allen's.
That's there right. You go. Yeah.
Anyway, but listen, Brandon, I have more questions for you.
Sure.
So this is my my questionnaire, which I borrowed from James Lipton, who was made famous for the Inside the Actor's Studio. So I have my 10 favorite questions here. So the first one is, what is your favorite word?
Favorite word. I'm going to go with my favorite word to say, and I try to like throw it into as many conversations as I can, is dichotomy. I love the word dichotomy. It just sounds so good. Rolls off the tongue.
It's brilliant. Now, yes, I can see that. I can, yeah. It's a word that you have to build.
Yeah, you do. And it's hard to find the use. Just today I was watching a video from Mike Rowe, who has a podcast called like The Way I Heard It or something like that. And I was watching this video by him, and he used the word dichotomy, but then he said it was dichotomous. And I was like, oh, dichotomous. Okay. That's a fancy variation on dichotomy. Anyway, dichotomy.
What is your least favorite word?
I'm going to judge myself for this one, but like, I just did it. Like, the word like, I use it way too much. Everyone uses it way too much. But like, we just can't help but like say it.
Just think of all the years you'd get back if you didn't say like.
I know. I would like save like thousands of years. Like.
And so what are you most excited about right now?
Right now? Man, from a personal standpoint, my little 14-month-old baby girl, like every day I'm excited to see what she's doing. Yeah, it's so cool to watch them grow up because every day it's something new. So personally, I'm so excited to see her grow. Business-wise, man, I'm excited about a mobile home park. Like I feel like a newbie again, where I'm looking for my first deal and I'm analyzing them and jumping in. And I'm excited for that because it just takes it to a new level. I'm starting over, but at a whole different level.
Wonderful. And what turns you off right now?
Meetings. I don't like meetings. Yeah. I used to have a lot of meetings and I've gotten rid of like most of them. And what I mean by that is just like pointless, like status meetings, you know, like we're all going to get together and talk about the status of this one thing. Like, I'd rather be like, just send me an email. Also, phone calls in general. Look, I've got one of the more popular podcasts out there and I do these interviews every week and you and I are talking just fine now. If you call me, I won't answer it. I hate the phone with a passion. Just recently, I read this book, reading a book called The Success Principles by Jack Canfield. And there's a chapter in there on fear. And I was like reading that. I'm like, I'm not afraid of anything. I was like, these people are weird. These all these examples of people like, I'm afraid of the stairs. And I'm like, what's wrong with these people? And then I realized, I think my hatred of the phone might or could be classified as a fear. I just don't like it, but I think I'm afraid of it.
Wow. I'm with you there. It's that, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. Text me and I can respond to it when
you
I
can't
want.
You can't fast forward to the end of the conversation, can you?
Exactly. You're so stuck on this call and you can't see them and you don't know what's going on. I don't know. Yeah. The phone, I get anxious every time the phone rings. I'm like,
So what sound or noise do you love?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. Right now, again, I'll go back to the personal side. Right now, a 14-month-old baby's laugh. When I like, oh my gosh, it's so good.
And what sound or noise do you hate?
She's teething. So I'm going to say that whine, that baby whine that everyone hates. Yeah,
I know. It's not the sound of your phone ringing, is it?
No, that's on vibrate 24/7. If I hear that thing ring, I'll throw it out the window.
And which leads me on to the next question. What is your favorite curse word?
You know, good question. I'm going to go with like, not, I mean, this is like PG level curse word, but I say it all the time. I say, dang it. And like, not like D-A-N-G space I-T. It's like more like D-A-N-I-T. It's like, dang it. Yeah. Like, I say dang it all the time. I don't know. That's just my
That's the universal word. And you can substitute anything you like for that, depending on your mood.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yep.
That's brilliant. So what profession other than your own would you love to attempt right now?
I want to be a pilot, actually. I would love to be a pilot. I started making moves there. I kind of slowed down because of dead space. I mean, to go back to that, right? I'm going to be a pilot someday. I'm going to learn how to fly. But the last time I went flying was 4 months ago. The time before that was 6 months before that.
It may take you a while to get your license.
Yeah, if that's how much dead space in my life. But if I really want to get it, I would go flying an hour every day for the next 30 days. And on day 31, I'd take my test and boom, I'd be done. No dead space. So.
And so what profession would you not like to attempt?
Telemarketer. I hate that phone.
And so my last question, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Yeah, I'm going to go with well done. It's actually a verse in the Bible. It says, you know, well done, good and faithful son. And I hope to hear well done.
That's brilliant. Well, Brandon, I can't thank you enough. You have been a fantastic guest. And it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And I can't wait to, you know, speak to you again sometime. But, you know, Brandon, it's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. This has been a lot of fun. And I love the questions. So.
That's brilliant.